All right, 35 past the hour. It's Wednesday. It's time for Scott Shanley time. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Hey, the young Scott Shanley and your attitude towards spring football at Nebraska compared to the older Scott Shanley attitude towards spring football was what?
It's a world of difference. I think when you're a young guy trying to climb up the depth chart, trying to prove your way, versus being a guy who, you know, you end up starting as a sophomore or junior, and you don't really look at spring ball as fondly once you've kind of made your way. But it's always fun to get back out there. I think it beats the winter conditioning part of it. You kind of get tired of being in the weight room and doing all the agility drills and sprint drills. You want to get out there and play football. So I think the young guys are always, there's a hunger, there's an attitude about them that it's their time to show the coaches that they should be playing in the fall. And that makes spring ball exciting.
Hey, one of the discussions with this year going into spring football, and I remember this back in the day, is the winter conditioning results would be released publicly, or the summer conditioning results would be released publicly, so you'd know who the fastest guy was or who could bench press the most weight. That's something that Scott would like to bring back, and it may happen at some point this spring. They may release what happened during winter conditioning. When you were playing, were you for that, and how would you look at it now being released by a program?
No, I think I'm for it. I think there's all sorts of there's obviously good and bad, but I think anything to motivate guys to want to be the best is always good. And everybody is motivated by perception. Everybody's motivated by what people think of them. It's a different day and age. I think the drawback to that would be guys on social media or how they take things with fans talking to them directly on social media about their performance or their results. And that is always the caveat when you talk about 2021 versus the year 2000 before social media. So, but I think more benefits to it, releasing it and pushing guys to want to be number one at their position or be one of the top five or however they rank it.
Scott Shanley joining us here. Let's dive into another busy week, and we're coming up on the draft, which will be 3 weeks from tomorrow. The big trade was Sam Darnold from the Jets to the Panthers. When you look at Carolina, their current situation, and you look at Sam Darnold's only 15 games so far as a starter in the NFL, and he's actually a little bit younger than Joe Burrow, what is Carolina betting on getting this version of Sam Darnold?
You know, I don't know if it's so much about Sam Darnold as it is the Panthers were they were motivated to find anybody but Teddy Bridgewater. And they went out, they signed Teddy last year after he was 5-0 with the Saints the year before, showed some promise. And then I think behind closed doors, that organization and mainly Matt Rhule, the head coach, soured on Teddy Bridgewater. I watched Teddy play. I thought he played the way up to expectations. No Christian McCaffrey. The defense was a bunch of young guys. But somewhere along the way, Matt Rhule just did not think Teddy Bridgewater could be a franchise quarterback or what he wanted in a quarterback. So Carolina let it be known they were going to bring in anybody and everybody. They threw a trade out for Darnold. The Jets took it. And I really think that's why Sam Darnold in Carolina was more so because they didn't want Teddy Bridgewater to be their quarterback. I think anytime you're drafted high, there's high expectations. Mm-hmm. Now, guys like Sam Darnold are able to be moved off of early because of the collective bargaining agreement. I talked about this before. You're not as tied to financially these guys drafting them in the top five like you used to be. So the Jets obviously have their quarterback peg that they're going to take in the draft. They got a pretty good return for Sam Darnold from Carolina. And I don't know if Sam Darnold can play. I haven't seen him play enough. I haven't seen him play with good players around him. I think he's excited about going to Carolina versus being in New York, that's for sure.
Is there another part of, you know, you're familiar with Matt Rhule and of course Joe Brady, that they know their culture and their coaching staff and those two together, and especially Joe Brady, where they're going to have a heavily schemed offense, that they think that they can fix Sam Darnold or he'll be successful because of what they do?
Yeah, for sure. I think when they look at his skill set, they obviously have to go back to USC tape and watch most of that. He was injured a lot with New York, didn't have great talent around him, different philosophies being pushed on him. And now you're going to go to Carolina. You're going to play for Joe Brady, which we all know what Joe Brady did with Joe Burrow at LSU. And I'm sure they see some of the same intangibles that they had with Joe that they see in Sam. So there's something that they like about him better than Teddy running that offense. I'm not so sure what it is. Matt Rhule, if anybody's watched Matt Rhule, he's high strung. He's like he drinks 10 or 15 Red Bulls a day. And Teddy is super laid back. And Teddy's a great locker room guy, but he is not always amped up. And some of me thinks there was a little bit of personality differences in the way they went about their work.
Can Joe Brady scheme enough vertical throws to try and figure out what is the best for Sam Darnold in that offense?
Yeah, if Sam Darnold can throw the deep ball, he will succeed in that offense. Joe Burrow at LSU had a great completion percentage. We know he played with great players. But Carolina has great players. Carolina, mm-hmm. Christian McCaffrey, outstanding running back. DJ Moore is one of the best wide receivers as far as vertical threats, speed down the field. Samuels, they have Robbie Anderson. I think he's back. I'm not sure, but he's a good pro receiver. So they have weapons. And Sam Darnold, I think if anybody saw it on social media yesterday, he kind of had a party. He was celebrating going to Carolina. And I think this offense definitely fits him a little better. And he has a chance now, with 2 years left on his contract, to show that he can be a franchise quarterback.
So he was stuck with Adam Gase, and he doesn't get to be with the new coach. And congratulations to Zach Wilson. It looks like you'll get to go to the Jets at number two. We've talked about this before. You played for one of the best coaches in the NFL. Good coaches in the NFL are underrated, but do we talk enough about the impact of bad coaches in the NFL?
No. And the one thing about the owners, the NFL is the business of winning. And owners do not, even if they have what they feel like is a good coach, if the results aren't there in the first year or two, they're going to move on because their fans expect results. You're trying to sell merchandise. You're trying to fill stadiums. So an owner will move off a coach really quick. Now, I was fortunate. You know, I played for Coach Solich, who was a good coach. I played in St. Louis when they had come off a Super Bowl. They had really good coaches, Lovie Smith, Mike Zimmer, and Bill Parcells in Dallas, and then obviously going to New Orleans. So I was always surrounded by really good coaches. But I think as a player, you know right away what works and what doesn't. And how a coach connects with the team. Mm-hmm. And if you look at coaches like Adam Gase, there was never a connection. Obviously, winning helps. Winning definitely helps. It's the main thing. But there's not a connection between the grown men sitting in that room listening to this guy talk. And you could just feel that with the Jets and Adam Gase. And some guys have it, some guys don't.
Is there, there's no salary cap for coaches. Is it pretty clear around the NFL of organizations that don't pay their coaching staffs, not just the head coach, but the other coaches, a competitive salary? I mean, is that another thing that is well known, and teams that do pay well can take advantage of that?
I think most teams are probably in the ballpark. If you go to a linebacker's coach, I don't think there's going to be huge discrepancy. Maybe by tenure, if you've been around for 30 years and been one of the best linebacker's coaches, you're going to be making more than somebody who just started. But those position coaches are making good money in the NFL. I think what separates great organizations and great head coaches from other people are coaches who are willing to hire the best. And they don't just go out and hire guys they're comfortable with. They don't go out and hire buddies. They go out and interview coaches, and they bring in the best, and they put together a plan to have an all-star staff. And I think that's what separates great coaches and great organizations from others. And all I can point to is my time with Coach Parcells. He brought in people he coached, mm-hmm. but he also brought in coaches he wasn't familiar with. Coach Payton the same way. Every few years, he'll turn over a few coaches, and there is no connection to the coaches he brings in, but he sits down, he interviews them, he talks to other people, and it's just about putting the best people in the building.
Why a guy like, it didn't work out at Nebraska for Bill Callahan. Didn't work out as a head coach in the NFL for the most part, but he has risen to one of the top offensive line coaches in the entire NFL, and he's a hot commodity. Why do you think he's been able to last so long in the NFL at that position?
Some guys are just built for the NFL. And their personalities, whatever it may be. Some guys are built for college. They like the recruiting part of it. They relate better to 17 to 20-year-old kids. There's nothing wrong with either, but some people are just cut out for certain levels better. And then you go a step further, and we've talked about before, just because you're a really good offensive coordinator or a really good defense coordinator doesn't mean you're going to be a great head coach. And same thing with position coaches. Just because you can coach an offensive line doesn't mean you're a great offensive coordinator. So I think Bill Callahan, what they found is he is a great offensive line coach, and nothing more, nothing less. And there's nothing wrong with that. And some guys just are really good working in their foxhole with their guys, with their position group, and they know exactly what they need to do day in and day out. And they don't have to get caught up in all the other gymnastics of meeting or orchestrating meeting times and media and all these different engagements. Some guys are just really good position coaches.
Now that we're about 3 weeks from out from the draft, if you're in one of the war rooms, is your draft pretty much set right now, 3 weeks out?
I think most people have their draft board set. The only thing that's going to change that right now is if something happens off the field, the guy gets in trouble, or they find out something else about a guy by talking to a former coach, this or that. But I don't think most people are going to dramatically change their draft board. They've watched all the tape. Their scouts have spent many, many hours writing up reports. They know who they like, who they want where. Now, the fun part of the draft is you don't know who's going to take who. Mm-hmm. There's somebody who's going to jump into the top five that maybe somebody had in the bottom 20. You never know what's going to happen in the draft. You never know what's going to happen with a trade. And that's what makes the draft fun, and it shakes up draft boards really early when those things happen.
You know, now that there's the focus on three with the Niners, you know, people are, all right, that's going to be Mac Jones. Well, I look at, Scott, the Niners have done some things over the last couple of years of either trading guys or acquiring guys that you don't hear about, and all of a sudden they make a deal. Trent Williams shows up in San Francisco, and a lot of people didn't see that coming. How are we to believe, of all these reports that, yeah, that's the Niners, they've locked into Mac Jones, that we should believe that that's what they're doing when they've made big deals and no one knew it was coming? Do we really think that they're telling people that they're going to draft him?
No, I don't. And mainly because I think three is really high for Mac Jones. That's just my personal opinion. And then you look at the fact of his skill set does not really translate to the Shanahan way, the Shanahan offense of having a quarterback who's more fleet-footed, who can get outside the pocket. I just, that fit seems really odd to me. To me, I think the 49ers made that move thinking they were going to get a different player at three. And now that the Jets have moved off Darnold, maybe they're worried they're not going to get the quarterback they wanted. Maybe they take Fields higher than anybody thought. People had Fields in the 7 to 10 range. Maybe they go ahead and they grab him because he's more of an athletic quarterback that they feel like they can work with. So you never know what's going to happen. It's going to be a lot of quarterbacks taken in the top 10. Everybody would think the 49ers are going to go quarterback. I certainly do as well. But you never know. That's a lot of ammo. When you're sitting at three, there are going to be teams willing to give up a lot for that pick. Maybe somebody really likes the tackle out of Oregon, and they want to go up and grab him. Now you move down to the 49ers, and you're sitting at six or seven or eight, and you can still get the guy you want. And that's the fun of the draft. You just never know. There could be more trades coming up here in the next couple of weeks.
Hey, this is a question that kind of Robert Kraft spoke out last week and kind of took a swing at Bill Belichick. And Belichick fanned on picking up Harry as his first-round pick at wide receiver, went against some of the scouts set. In the front offices of NFL teams, you have an abundance of scouts, but you also have the head coach, you've got the general manager, and you've got coaches that have to coach those players that are coming in. How loud is the voice of actual on-field coaches when it comes to, hey, I think this guy would be perfect to us?
They certainly have a voice, and tenure plays a huge role. And I've saw many times when I was in New Orleans, Joe Vitt, my linebackers coach, who was in the NFL for 30 years, he certainly had an input and a say in who they drafted and how high they drafted. But there was nobody made any mistakes about it. It was John Payton and Mickey Loomis working together. And those two guys, if they liked the player, they were taking it no matter what anybody else said. And that's every organization. There is somebody who's going to ultimately make the final call. Some organizations, and fortunately for the Saints, Mr. Benson, the owner, never got involved. Some organizations, you look at Washington, owner comes in the room and says, this is the guy I want. And it doesn't matter. He's the owner. He gets who he wants. So that is another layer of the draft process that some organizations go through. But you know, a position coach will get some say. There's also a lot of pressure on position coaches. I've seen where a position coach really doesn't want a guy, and they draft that guy, and now they say, now coach him up. So the position coaches have a voice, but not as much as you would think.
Great stuff, Scott. As always, I appreciate our chat. Have a good week.
Yeah, absolutely. Take care.
That's Scott Shanley, a former Husker Super Bowl champion. It's the draft industry and how much it has grown to this point where it is an obsession. We're still 3 weeks out from tomorrow for the NFL draft. And you turn left, you turn right, you're on ESPN, you're watching Talking Head Show or SportsCenter, you're going to see highlights from a pro day, or you're going to hear a discussion about the draft. And some draft experts are already up to mock draft 5.0. Some haven't released their first mock draft. The other part of the NFL, and this affects the draft because it affects Houston, is when will we hear from Deshaun Watson? There is a lot of stuff out there. People are coming forward publicly. Ashley Solis did yesterday. There now could be trending towards criminal nature. Deshaun Watson has not spoken. His lawyer has spoken. But I imagine the NFL is not very happy at all. And there's the exempt list. But it's not just the NFL that can do it. The Texans can do it. Do the Texans really believe they're still going to be able to trade Deshaun Watson? Even if none of this is true, do they think they're going to be able to trade Deshaun Watson? It's a situation that gets worse by the day. There's got to be an ending coming up soon, or at least a movement forward. But it doesn't look good for Deshaun Watson. And I'm wondering what the NFL will do. Is it the exempt list, or will the Texans just say, hey, we gotta put Deshaun Watson on the side? But that's right there with the draft coverage. Is one of the faces of your NFL is in the news for all the wrong reasons, when at this time you thought he'd be in the news for having a new home. All right, 11:51, the mailbag is going to come up here in a little bit. If you're just tuning in, Nebraska practice today. Parker Gabriel was there. We'll get his thoughts on some of the things he saw. But the big news is Marquise Stepp, who was projected to be one of the top running backs for Nebraska, the transfer from USC, will not practice the rest of the spring. He has suffered an injury that Stepp did not know that he had. So he had an injury at USC, a foot injury, that USC took care of. But apparently, Stepp didn't know enough about the injury, or Nebraska did not know the full extent of the injury, and that it was not completely taken care of, or Stepp was not completely cleared. And so he went through the beginning of spring ball, suffered the injury, and now Nebraska has shut him down for the rest of spring. Frost did say that they will have him back by the summer. Ben Stille is also had some surgery before spring. He is going to be out for the summer. That's probably okay. You don't need Stille going through another spring. You know what he can do. He knows what he has to do. But the Marquise Stepp injury is one to watch. He misses out on, 14 additional practices in the spring. And you have to wonder about that foot injury, if it's something that's going to linger. Is it going to be a problem next year or in the fall? Nebraska can't afford issues at running back. We're going to get into it a little bit later. Is why has that position not remain the same as history at Nebraska? Why has it declined? It can't be just misses in recruiting. Guys that you were counting on to be the bell cow who either weren't here very long or got injured. Remember Greg Bell? Remember Mo Washington? Those were pretty good pickups that were supposed to solve your running back problem. They're not here. Dedrick Mills is already gone after 2 years, and he was plagued by some injuries and getting up to speed how to play running back in that offense. And now a guy that walked onto the campus from USC with experience under his belt is out for the rest of the spring. We'll discuss with Parker and all of you about why the running back position has declined. Is it talent or is it technique? That's all still to come. We roll till 2. Mailbag is coming up in just a bit on the Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone.